Okay, so I invited Edie partially because I didn't want to just focus on oil and gas development. I want to hear more about, I try to get a broad spectrum of different ecosystems, and I think this is a really interesting one. So.
Okay. Thank you. And now for something different. So I'm going to talk about the work that I have done in Southern California, mostly working on conservation reserves. I used to work in Wyoming and Utah on strip mines. I guess that's why we all know each other. But I've been in California since 1988, I hate to say. And most of the time, the work that I've been doing is battling invasive species. California has a Mediterranean-type climate here in Southern California. We've had invasive grasses and forbs, mostly from the Mediterranean of Europe, for the last couple hundred years. In some places, it's so bad that we have no uninvaded reference areas. Some of the vegetation types that I'll talk to you about today, grasslands and coastal sage scrub. Coastal sage scrub is one of our Mediterranean shrubland types, and I'll talk a little bit about the desert. Invasive species themselves, you've been talking about how soil moving practices change the soils and looking at soil chemical and physical changes post-succession, post-restoration. But the invasive species themselves can have effects on the soil and alter soil chemical and microbiological characteristics, and we'll talk about those. We have another problem. Here we've got high anthropogenic nitrogen deposition. I'll show you some figures in a minute, and that increases nitrogen levels in the soil, and it increases exotic grass productivity, and then high grass productivity increases the fire frequency, which is another one of our problems in our Mediterranean shrublands and grasslands. And so here are a couple of figures on the left of some an invaded nature reserve in the upper left that used to be covered with mostly shrubs, but now it's covered with mostly exotic grasses from the Mediterranean, and it's an area of high nitrogen deposition. And these areas burn very frequently. Some areas that used to burn on a 30 to 60 year cycle are now burning on a 5-year cycle, which is way too frequent. So I put the Mindland pictures in the bottom there. I always thought it was tough when I was doing Mindland work in Wyoming. Now I have to admit I didn't have saline or sodic soils, and I had nice topsoil that was respread, but I didn't have any weeds to deal with. And anything that you planted, anything that was in your seed mix actually came up. And as you'll see from the studies that I'm going to report today, anything that we plant has to compete with exotic weeds from the Mediterranean. So let me give you a little background on nitrogen deposition. This is a model of nitrogen deposition of the United States. The areas in red have high levels, greater than 15. There are kilograms per hectare per year. Much of the eastern U.S. has areas of high nitrogen deposition, areas that are in under agriculture, so that's ammonia deposition, areas that are close to cities and factories, automobiles, internal combustion engines, that's nitrate. And then much of the western U.S. has pretty clean air still until you get to California. And here's a close-up of California. And I will be talking about sites in Southern California. So we're right here in Long Beach. The Port of Long Beach is actually a very big point source problem of nitrogen emissions that spread out in, this is called the Los Angeles Air Basin, surrounded by these mountains, and I'll be talking about sites in here and sites on out into the desert that also receive some nitrogen deposition that moves from the Los Angeles Air Basin all the way out here into the desert. And so this is a model that was generated of nitrogen deposition on a 4-kilometer grid. So this is a view from Riverside looking west towards Los Angeles on a typical smoggy summer air inversion day. We have areas with 30 kilograms per hectare per year, where a clean air region would have about 2 kilograms per hectare. So 30 kilograms per hectare, that is fertilizer levels of nitrogen coming down. This is what a farmer would put on a small grain field. We're a Mediterranean climate. Most of our rain comes in the winter. Most of our dry deposition comes in the summers. In fact, 90% of our nitrogen comes down as dry deposition, so ammonium and nitrate that deposits to soil and leaf surfaces, and then it is leached into the soil during the winter rainy season, and winter is our growing season when it is then available for plant uptake. So just to convince ourselves that nitrogen was a problem, we've done lots of fertilizer experiments. We pick an area that has relatively clean area. We fertilize. So here's some nitrogen fertilizer plots since 1999. Lots of annual variability. These are a lot of annuals, so shrubs that are interspaced with a lot of native annuals and exotic annuals. The exotic annual grasses here are, for instance, red brome is one of our big problem invaders from the Mediterranean. Lots of variability from year to year in this annual vegetation because we have variable precipitation from year to year. But one thing that you do note in the unfertilized plots is that there are some very high levels of biomass in many years, and the control has pretty low biomass of these exotic grasses. I've put this red line here. This is 100 grams per meter squared, which is 1 ton of fine fuel per hectare, and that is the threshold fine fuel for carrying a fire across the landscape. And when you get nitrogen fertilization, in many years you have enough fine fuel to carry fires across the landscape, whereas in unfertilized plots you do not. So we believe that these fires that we're seeing are fueled to a large extent by nitrogen deposition. We did a historical survey looking at a 1930 vegetation map and a 2002 vegetation map. This is Western Riverside County. I know that you can't see what all these points mean, but basically what we did is we wanted to look at the percentage of sites from 1930 to 2002 that were converted from coastal sage scrub Mediterranean shrubland to exotic annual grassland, and about 33% of this shrubland was converted in about 70 years. And we did a probability of conversion and looking at the amount of nitrogen, and at about 11 kilograms per hectare per year, we found a rapid probability. In other words, most of the sites that type converted were above in sites that received more than 11 kilograms per hectare per year. So we call that our threshold or our critical load of nitrogen deposition for vegetation type conversion. We have a similar story in the desert. The amount of nitrogen that comes down is a little bit less because it's a little bit further away from Los Angeles, but we've still got about 12 kilograms per hectare per year. This is what the desert looks like on a smoggy day. This is looking towards Joshua Tree National Park, where they would prefer to have clean air, but they don't. During rainy growing seasons, the exotic grasses, there's a grass called Schismus barbatus, it's also called Mediterranean split grass, that gets incredibly productive under 12 kilograms per hectare. When you go out to areas with 3 kilograms per hectare, it's a much smaller grass. We have fertilized plots, so here's a little plot that is fertilized with 30 kilograms per hectare per year, and these plots just stood out like little postage stamps across our site, these little lawns, these little square lawns. And whether we fertilized with 5 or with 30 kilograms per hectare, we had an increase in exotic grass biomass. And then here's the native biomass that was declining not significantly. So we also get fires in the desert. Historically, fires in the desert were pretty rare, but these areas that have been invaded by exotic grasses do get a lot of fires. And so here's red brome in the desert in a higher elevation desert chaparral. And the red brome carries the fires from shrub to shrub, and even Joshua Tree woodlands are burning in areas where they have had red brome and sometimes cheatgrass invasion. And then we also calculated a threshold or a critical load for nitrogen deposition in the desert, and somewhere at around, using a different modeling approach, but somewhere at around 3.2 kilograms per hectare per year, we saw the probability of exceeding that fire threshold. Again, we used 1 ton per hectare as the threshold, and then it leveled off at about 9 kilograms per hectare, at which point it was only the amount of rainfall that controlled the biomass. So that's the background, and now I'm going to talk about some research questions that I'll have to go through very quickly. Are the restored native communities stable using different methods to control exotic grasses? So our problem is controlling exotic grasses. Are invaded soils resilient in their chemical and microbiological characteristics compared to restored soils? In other words, what are the limiting factors? Is it factors related to the invasive species themselves, or is it factors related to plant-soil feedbacks caused by those invasive species that are limiting restoration? And to make a long story short, I just put together a table of a whole bunch of studies that my students and I have done. There are many more in the literature, where we looked at fire, mulching, solarization, herbicide, fluazifop is a grass-specific herbicide, mowing and weeding, and many of these also included seeding. We looked at a number of different sites, grassland, coastal sage scrub is CSS, and some desert sites. And in each of them, we were able to reduce the exotic grasses to a great extent, but we found out that after 2 to 5 years, sometimes up to 10 years, the exotic grasses reinvaded. So none of these sites were stable. We had one mulch site that didn't have much invasion, and another mulch site where we had unsuccessful restoration. So basically, whatever factors caused these exotic grasses to colonize in the first place, after you control them, restore the native plants, the exotic grasses come back into those sites. So let's see. This I'm I guess I'm not really running out of time, but according to the clock, I am. So this is just a, I won't go through the data. This is just a picture to show that tarping or solarization is a very effective method. We get these beautiful native annuals in areas that we have tarped, but the problem is we've only done it in a small scale, and when we come back a few years later, they're surrounded by these exotic wild oats, and all the seeds come back in, and all of our restoration is undone after a few years. So the problem is the seed bank of the exotic grasses. So the soil problem that we face is the exotic grasses have this incredible amount of this incredible seed density, 7,000 exotic grass seeds per meter squared, 4,700 exotic forb seeds, and the native forbs is only 400, so an order of magnitude lower, and then only 14 shrubs. Immediately post-fire, we find out that we can reduce the exotic grasses and reduce the exotic forbs somewhat, but there's still on a similar order, or the forbs are still an order of magnitude higher than the native forbs. So post-fire gives us an opportunity for revegetation, but the exotic seed bank is still tremendously high. So now to the soils part of my talk, looking at the plant soil feedback. This is some work that my student Sarah Jo Dickens did. She looked at the microbial community, for instance, looking at phospholipid fatty acid analysis, and she was able to show that in some grasslands, one of the grasslands, the upper one, was restored by burning. The lower one was restored by hand weeding, and she was able to get a shift in the microbial community, and she also showed that there was a shift in the fungal to bacterial ratio. But here, even the direction of that fungal to bacterial biomass ratio depended upon season. For instance, there were higher bacteria under exotic grasses during the peak of the growing season. And there were some shifts from season to season. So the season, the time of year when she collected the soil samples, was as important as the restoration treatment in determining the direction of the microbial community and fungal to bacterial ratio. She looked at extractable nitrogen. The upper site is a site that was burned as a restoration technique, the other one that was hand weeded as a restoration technique. The invaded and the restored site, initially the mineral nitrogen was higher in the invaded, but then later on in the season, mineral nitrogen was lower in the invaded. And she took, and that was in the burn site, but not significant in the weeded site. And she took that to mean that the biomass of the exotic grasses was sufficiently low here, that mineral nutrients were left in the soil under the native vegetation that was taken up by exotic grasses, simply because they have such high biomass and such high rates of nitrogen uptake. And then overall, she showed nitrogen cycling rates were decreased by restoration because the exotic grasses take up more mineral and recycle it more rapidly than native species. But even here, there was variability from season to season. So looking at some incubations that she did in the laboratory, she showed that again, looking at her burned restored and her hand weeded restored sites, this is mineralization rate. The black is mineralization, so that's ammonia production and or consumption, and the gray is nitrification. there was quite a bit of difference from site to site. There was a suggestion that at least during one season, at the senescent season versus the germination season, there was some higher mineralization. But overall, the pattern was inconsistent from season to season and from site to site, suggesting that the impact of the invasive species was not so incredibly strong on these recycling, nutrient cycling processes. Looking at total soil carbon and nitrogen, here's her restored burn site and her restored weeded site. Total nitrogen is the same in the burned and the weeded site. Total carbon is the same in the burned and the invaded site. And the same pattern for the hand weeded and the invaded site. So these but just extractable N is increased greatly by hand weeding in this particular season. So what she was finding was that these systems are probably buffered by the total consistency of the total nitrogen and carbon from site to site. So, summarizing, the exotic grasses can be controlled by various techniques, but the seed banks are very dense, and grasses reestablish or recolonize within 3 to 5 years, and especially in areas with high nitrogen deposition. So, restoration will require that you come back and retreat those areas every 3 to 5 years. And we were talking about how do we change the way land managers do things. And when I give this talk, I always feel like the land managers go, "Oh, here comes that lady who's going to tell us we have to keep controlling weeds again." The good news is, though, invasive species seem to have weak feedbacks on the coastal sage and the grassland soils, perhaps buffered by the consistent total carbon and nitrogen. We only saw small changes in mineral cycling and microbial composition upon restoration. But again, the problem here is that restoration reduces, but it doesn't eliminate exotic grasses. So maybe we don't have the final word on how exotic grasses are affecting the soils until we can find a real control area. And then our other problem is that we have so many areas subject to high levels of nitrogen deposition that we need to, we are working on legislative controls to reduce nitrogen deposition below the critical loads effective for restoration. Thank you. You guys need a break.
Yeah, we're moving into our break, so we left, and we'll reconvene at 2:40. But you can take some questions if you like.
Okay. The difference there is I have visited the Mediterranean, and they do have these annual grasses as early successional species, but they are replaced by other species, shrubby species, later on in succession, whereas in our system the annual grasses cause type conversion of our native shrublands. So it doesn't do that in the Mediterranean.
Any idea
We've actually been looking at the soil microorganisms to see whether there are differences in microbial composition, and we see that the exotic grasses have very strong responses to local California mycorrhizal fungi. But another really big reason is that our soils are quite a bit higher in nutrients than the Mediterranean soils. A lot of the Mediterranean soils are calcareous, very low in phosphorus-fixing soils, whereas our California soils are, a lot of the local soils are granites and also basalts that are relatively high in phosphorus. And these are not just nitrogen-loving plants, but phosphorus-loving plants. So our soils really aren't limiting in phosphorus the way the Mediterranean soils are. And then we dump nitrogen on them in addition, and so the weeds win. Yes? I don't, but my colleague Emma Aronson does. So, yeah, I think we'll have some people who will be looking at that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thanks very much.
Okay.